If your dial shifted or you pressed the wrong button and you are wondering where you are, you have landed in the wonderful land of WGXC. Whoa, I'm turning upside down. Wait, I'm not anymore.
Hey, it's Pamela from Pine Hill. You're listening to WGXC Acra. Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Thursday, December 21st, turn out or tune in to Catskill's Winter Solstice Festival. They're closing down Main Street to cars from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, with all sorts of entertainers wandering the area. The Avalon Lounge in Catskill has an outdoor showing of the Peanuts Christmas special, with Wesley Harper providing the soundtrack. And then indoors at the Avalon Lounge, Brian DeWan is giving his annual holiday performance. That will have a live webcast at WGXC.org, and some of it will be on 90.7 FM. So turn out or tune in to Brian DeWan live at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, Thursday, December 21st on WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Christopher Lee Brothers Plumbing and Heating of Albany, wishing everyone a joyous holiday season and Happy New Year. Red Carpet Service and Solutions since 1939. Information at CRISBRO.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Joanne Williams in Inwood, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Oh, you can hear me now?
Welcome to Race Talks this evening on this wonderfully cold day in Hudson, anyway, of December 19th, a Tuesday, where every third Tuesday of the month, you will hear me speaking here with our amazing guest. And we are also a wavefarm.org enterprise. Why do we talk about race? Some people ask me still. My answer is always very simple: to combat racism. And for that, education is key and discussion a must. And now, let's get talking, because no topic is taboo. We have Garrett Roche in the studio today as a sound assistant, and of course, he's the host of the podcast, The Roche Solid Truth. Now, we are expecting another in-house guest in our studio, and we will be looking out for her to see when she comes in. But of course, we have a chock full of material to get through. This is our poetry special because it is December, and I wanted to make sure we end the year on a high note. And I love poetry. And I think for anyone who knows me, being a former English teacher, I guess once an English teacher, always an English teacher, because you're always looking at grammar. I love words, and words really matter to me. And so I wanted to showcase the talents of the people that I know in the community of Hudson and my community. I also have a guest that shared with me some of his poetry, and I was very enlightened, and I am so delighted to have him. His name is Ron Spears of Spears Consulting. And again, he will be on. I might just have him first because, we were waiting for our in-house guest, who is Ifeteo Cobbin. So I'm going to share her name so that the powers that be will, she's hearing me say it somewhere and she's running to get to the studio. But let's start first with what is December about. And usually when we think December, we think holidays. And sure enough, there are three very special, particular holidays that are celebrated in the month of December. And I just wanted to share a few specifics about these three holidays because I've been asked about them, or I was in the environment of other people talking about it. Yeah, I was listening in, eavesdropping. And I thought, well, if I don't know specifically these answers, and maybe the people who are listening to me on Race Talks also don't know. And it is something that we should be talking about because Race Talks is where we have the conversation on race and ethnicity, the very necessary conversation. And so when you look at holidays, what are we really looking at? Are we looking at religions? Are we looking at cultural traditions? Or are we looking at social conceptions? And in many cases, it can be all three. So I will just start the show and like I said, we're going to have Ron Spears on first, and I'm going to warm the audience, the listeners up. But he will be on talking again, like I said, about poetry, where we will have the term, the theme of bridging science and the spoken word for a global transformation. And so when we look at what's around the globe, how religions obviously are, people are following their religious convictions around the world. And the three religions that I will discuss will be the first one that is a Judaism, the Judeo-Christian spirit of, and I want to pronounce it correctly, Hanukkah. And I am actually not a Hanukkah guru, so I'm taking this material from history.com. And I will state a few of the things that I wanted to know. First, I should say, though I'm not Jewish, I am a spiritual person, and I had a Jewish teacher in second grade who taught us the menorah song. I called it that. I think it's when I looked it up on YouTube, it was Hanukkah, Oh Hanukkah. And I would sing the song, but you don't want me to sing that song. But I really love this song. I just sang it every year, pretty much around the Christmas tree. And because no one around my family or the people I'm friends with on this special day are Jewish, they look at me and go, "What are you singing?" And I'm like, "I don't know." So for me, this song is tradition and cultural, although it's not of a religious marker for me. But this is Hanukkah is an 8-day Jewish celebration that commemorates the rededication during the 2nd century BC of the Second Temple in Jerusalem, where, according to legend, Jews had risen up against their Greek Syrian oppressors in the Maccabean Revolt. Hanukkah, which means dedication in Hebrew, begins on the 25th of Kislev on the Hebrew calendar and usually falls in November or December. That was something I didn't know. I thought it was always in December. Hanukkah 2023 begins on the evening of Thursday, December 7th, and ends on the evening of Friday, December 15th, often called the Festival of Lights. The holiday is celebrated with the lighting of the menorah, traditional foods, games, and gifts. And there's 8 menorah candles, and one of the menorah candles is situated so it lights the other menorah candles. And like I said, because I don't really want to make you turn the radio off while you're listening, I won't sing my famed Hanukkah song, but I am going to play that song out with young boys from Jerusalem who will be singing in both English and in Hebrew. So let me move on to the next holiday that we are celebrating this month. It's Christmas. And for everyone who's around listening to my voice, I think you know from going into shops and stores and celebrating with your colleagues like I did today, we celebrate Christmas on the 25th. of December, and it is a religious holiday in that it's a Christian holiday, and yet the day, December 25th, is also a pagan holiday. So it's one that the Romans, they celebrate this between 17th and the 25th of December, which they call, it's the Festival of Saturnalia. And it paid tribute to, of course, the god of agriculture and harvest, Saturn. There were sacrifices, banquets, and gift giving and partying. So it's really interesting how both the religious and the traditional cultural specificities of gift giving and partying are very similar. And we have Kwanzaa. And this is one of those that someone mentioned specifically that they didn't know about, that they asked me about. And I'm like, oh, why? You want to ask the black girl in the room? But I was able to share that Kwanzaa, as far as the development of it, it was very recently developed in 1966. But I know that my family growing up did not really celebrate Kwanzaa at all. We never had any of the traditional things that you would do during Kwanzaa. But Kwanzaa seemed to be on the rise when African Americans started going to colleges and universities that were a way for them to come together, black community and colleges to come together and have a celebration on their own. So I'll talk to you about the principles. There are, I believe, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 principles. And one is umoja. That's the one I'm more familiar with. That's unity. Then there's self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. So there's also a specific amount of days one would celebrate these 7 principles, which form the core of values that are considered communitarian throughout the African continent. And this, one would say it was created or devised in 1966 by Maulana Ron Karenga, who is an African, who was a person who developed it as an African-American and Pan-African holiday to celebrate the history, values, family, community, and culture of the African diaspora. And I didn't know this, and I said, you know, why didn't I? As a director of Multicultural Student Affairs at a prestigious college, one would say, why didn't I know that this Swahili phrase, Matunda ya Kwanzaa, is where Kwanzaa gets its name from? But I really didn't know that. So he learned something new every day. And I wanted to make sure I mentioned that, because I figured if I didn't know, maybe a handful of people out there also didn't know. So I'm looking at Ron Spears right now. And Ron, I'm getting ready to introduce you. But one of the questions I'm going to have up front after I do introduce you is to find out from you, did you know the Swahili phrase Matunda ya Kwanzaa? And you probably did. Oh, I see you're shaking your head. Well, I'll let you answer. But let me introduce you, because I do know that we want to save space for the next guest. But, you know, I could talk all day about the poetry that I love. But we're going to introduce Ron Spears, who hails from Detroit, who's joining us with a unique background in physics and engineering. He uses his art and poetry to bridge science and spoken word for global transformation. His latest book, Black Matter Lives, explores manifesting change using the laws of physics, the power of the mind, and the spoken word. Spears, a graduate of Morehouse College, that's how I know him, woohoo, go Morehouse and Spelman, and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, brings over 25 years of experience in global transformation, consulting projects, and community-based initiatives focused on improving the quality of life in Africa and the diaspora. And one of the last things that I remember speaking with Ron about recently was his latest travels to Africa. So I hope he spends some time sharing that information too. But welcome, Ron. May I call
Thank you, Ron,
or Mr. Spears?
I'm glad to be here. Glad to see you and hear your voice and talk with you about this very important subject.
Great. Now, answer the question about whether or not you knew the Swahili Matanda de Kwanza.
Yeah, the Swahili term that I am more familiar. I'm not familiar with that one, but the one I am familiar with regards to Kwanzaa is the Nguzo Saba, which basically focuses on the seven principles that you had mentioned. So yeah, no, I'm more used to the Nguzo Saba.
Okay.
As a phrase that describes, you know, the first fruits and the principles of Kwanzaa.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. It is, but you know, the seven principles are pretty straightforward, and you know, starting the day after Christmas all the way through New Year's Day with ending with Imani and Faith. So it's definitely seven very, very strong principles and family and community oriented. So I actually am running the Kwanzaa program for my church this year, well, last year and this year. So I just kind of did the run of show last night. So we're planning for that. So
let me ask you, since you're involved in the Kwanzaa celebration, would you see it more as a religious endeavor or an ethnic endeavor or both?
Yeah, it's definitely not a religious program or holiday or anything like that. It's stated as a non-religious program, but it's more along the lines of community and in terms of the race and the ethnicity and the community awareness and consciousness, and keeping in mind these seven core principles that are important. The thing that I like to focus on is not, you know, is living the principles, not being able to know that Umoja is unity and Kujishaguli is self-determination. I mean, if you can recite all of them in Swahili and English,
Ujima,
you know, great,
Ujama,
cool.
Nia, Kumba,
Ujama, Ujima, Kaumba, Nia, Imani, you know,
they're beautiful
great.
Sounding.
But what's more important is living those seven principles. So having, you know, different things that you're committed to doing at you know, conveniently located at the end of the year, so you can kind of do a little bit of self-reflection on the current year and goals to do more certain things the next year. So that's kind of where it's more of a, you know, a little bit of a call to action, a little bit of a self-reflection, community development, you know, and focus basically at a family level, individual family level, with a small group of friends or with a larger community. In my case, I do both. I have a couple of family friends. We've been getting together for Kwanzaa for years, and this was even before we even had kids. And now all of our kids are in college. So it's been a great resource and network for us. But I also, like I said, I run the Kwanzaa program at my church here in Detroit, and it's a pretty big church. So it's, you know, definitely it's where I showcase all the work that I do, our church does, I should say, in Africa. So that as well as in the community here in Detroit. So it's just a way of saying this is how we are living the principles, as opposed to can we recite all seven principles and explain what they mean. You got to go deeper than that and incorporate it into how you live your life.
And I also think you need to do it more than a day, right? I mean, you can think of it and talk about it and experience a part of it in a day, but it is really a value that's fundamental in how one might want to live life and how to treat oneself and others, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So share with us do you have any poetry that would also be from this period. I mean, one of the things that we're definitely going to do is discuss our favorite poetry and share some of our own. But what motivates you in giving back to the community in this way? And does all of this experience that you have informs your poetry and how you go about writing and, you know, bringing together the lyricalness of the words and what they mean?
Absolutely. The words sort of come to me, whether it be through ancestral downloads or my life experiences. You know, a lot of times when you experience, you know, one thing life is going to teach you is a little bit of trauma and drama. And out of that comes, and that's part of the process of your own spiritual growth and development. And out of that comes deep self-reflection. And a lot of times I end up expressing that, those lessons learned through poetry, because it forces you to be concise. It forces you to be a little bit to the point and be creative and have a little bit of a lesson in there that somebody else who may not have gone through that before or is going through that can get a bit of encouragement, can feel the energy and vibration of your words. And that's the power of the spoken word. It can transform people in terms of what they, you know, they may, somebody's going to need to hear that at that exact moment in time. And it can have a transformative effect on you, you know? So that's kind of one of the things. I can share a brief poem that I have just with a little bit of background. As part of, I run the Rites of Passage program, which is the youth program at the church. We take kids to Africa each year for a traditional manhood and womanhood training ritual with a village in West Africa. And part of that trip is to go to Gori Island, which is right off the coast of Dakar, Senegal. Mm. And it's a slave castle where Africans were enslaved, or captured Africans were held at Gori Island, put on ships and brought into the Americas and the Caribbean, or North and South America. So, you know, it's something that the young people need to experience. Okay, everybody needs to experience, you know, really, but the young people in specific. And then, but having gone there,
can I just interrupt for 1 second? You said the young people need to experience. What mm-hmm. is the value, do you believe, they get from that experience?
Well, they, you know, right now we are fortunately beyond the civil rights movement. Things are going pretty well. We're able to go to nice schools like Morehouse and Spelman and Michigan and Wisconsin and others. And so the young people growing up now, they have a tendency to forget or not, because they didn't grow up in, like our parents and grandparents did, they didn't grow up in that. And so it's a way of reminding them that they stand on the shoulders of ancestors yes. who made a lot of sacrifices so that they can have these blessings. And there's still people in Africa and in other areas in the diaspora that don't have the same privileges and blessings that they have. So mm-hmm. it just sort of has that transformative effect on them so that they can always remember the great Holocaust that we went through, and they can always be determined to always sort of stay in gratitude yes. And also think about their brothers and sisters in Africa as well as throughout the diaspora.
Right. Yeah. You thanks know. For sharing that. Now yeah. I'll let you continue with the spoken
okay,
word.
Okay. So yeah, I'll go into the piece, because it's you know, I've been to Gori Island probably about 8 times now, but this one just kind of highlights the first 5 trips to Gori Island, and it summarizes the emotions that I went through. Okay. I felt an ancestral welcome my first time on African soil, but when I got to Gori Island, my blood began to boil. I cried as I stood in front of the door of no return, and I wished that all Europeans would die and burn. My second trip enabled me to take in the psychic trauma. I actually listened to the curator describe all the drama. Dungeons where men, women, and children were just tossed. slave ships would arrive to participate in this Holocaust. My third trip changed my whole concept of religion. A Christian chapel upstairs is what caused my division. Slave merchants would worship and then rape women and girls. How God would allow such a tragedy threw my mind into a whirl. My fourth trip provided insight for my healing process to start. You see, history goes in cycles, and people are simply pawns just playing their parts. The Middle Passage spread Africans throughout the diaspora, adding our unique spice to the Caribbean, North and South America. My fifth trip to Gori Island was an experience of jubilation. Standing at the door of no return this time was actually a celebration. You see, Europeans enslaved themselves first, but they either died or failed to thrive. I was able to return as a tourist on the shoulders of my ancestors' will to survive. My anger and questioning of God's wisdom has now come to an end. The ability to forgive helps the process for a broken heart to mend. My wish is for the world to understand the magnitude of this great debt and for everyone of African descent to experience this and never, ever forget. Ashe. Snap, snap.
Yes. Well, that's the story. And what I like about your poetry there, it had a beat. It had, you know, more than just meaning with the words, the way you spoke it. It, you know, it elevated parts of what you said so that it mattered more. You know, it gave more, I don't know, timbre to the story.
Well, thank you.
The motivation of that was what you obviously shared. But it was also a reflection of, you know, how we experience things differently over time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, you know, the part of the principle of the book Black Matter Lives is, you know, the laws of physics change. You know, it's sort of a play on words. Black Lives Matter, Black Matter Lives. Change the words around, changes the whole dynamic of the movement, so to speak, where you get in the laws of physics, and as you get closer to the speed of light, time changes, right? So time collapses. And so literally I closed my eyes and when reciting that poem into the black matter, so to speak, and I could easily go back to those times that I was at Gori Island and envision that. And that's can sum up the emotions. And for people, there's a lot of people of African descent that will never spend one day on the African continent. So if that ends up being, you know, you or somebody, then they can go to travel to Africa through my words, through listening to my words, and you know, feel as though they are there with me, or they can visualize everything as I'm reciting that piece. So that's the importance of and the power of spoken word and the power of the Black Matter Lives, which is the source of, you know, lives is our continued struggle and survival and, you know, transformation.
And what you just stated, the meaning behind that was also found in County Cullen's work, Heritage, where he talks about Africa, right?
Yep.
Definitely a different Africa, although he's talking about it in the earlier part of the 20th century. And it's definitely has changed, you know. It's become it's a continent, but many of the nations in the continent have gained in the civilization building, which we would consider roads, right? And tall skyscrapers and electricity. And so there are still parts that are underdeveloped, which is beautiful, because when we think of as a Westerner, when we say underdeveloped, we usually mean not yet making it. But when I say underdeveloped, I'm coming from a place where I think it's a beautiful thing, where you want to go and you see trees and you see animals, you see nature, and it's a regular habitat, and they don't know humans, and we don't need to be in existence for them to thrive. So for me, I think all parts of the world should have that underdevelopedness, and we should, well, obviously, with global warming and everything, I don't want to get too political, but we need to value that. But we also know that people live there and they would like to have a civilized life. I actually may want to, one of the things that I wanted to do during our last section of roundtable is share parts of poetry that we like from others and ourselves. So I'm going to hold off talking, reading anything about the heritage. But one of the things that it asks right straight up is, what is Africa to me? And so you bringing up Gori, is it Gori Island? Am I saying that
right? Yes, Goree, G-O-R-E-E.
You're making us understanding what it is for you. And that's really beautiful in what you stated. While I was listening, I heard some of the words you were using, and I felt maybe if I was listening as a European American, I might go, I might hold my breath a little bit. I mean, clearly we all know history, and as Americans, we know what, who dropped bombs on Hiroshima. And so we know on the other end, we're Europeans, we're Westerners, and if not Europeans, we're Westerners too. And as an American, we have that heritage that we also have to own. So how would you feel, or what would you say to the European who you were talking to? How might you share your meaning of those words that you use to the listeners who are coming from that tradition?
Two things. I mean, I performed that piece, and I've seen people of European descent come to tears listening to it, tears of joy, because you have to go through the five cycles, okay? Because that was the first trip to there. And for many African-Americans, when they, if you end up going to Africa, you can choose to go east to Egypt. You can choose to go south and to South Africa. But if you go west, you're going to maybe go to one of those slave castles in Ghana or in the Gambia or Senegal or Sierra Leone. So when you go that first time, it's going to be very emotional for you. Your emotions are going to be very, very raw. And that's what that first trip was. Okay. And most people, why would you go back to that? Well, I go back because I bring different groups of young people each year. So I've been so many times where I was able to go through all those emotions. So by the time I was there for like the fourth and fifth time, the healing process has started in terms of the poem evolved the more times that I went. But if you only go there one time, you might stay in that state of anger and hatred almost for that ugly part of history. Right. But I'll say this, though, because, the Gambia, Senegal is very, very metropolis type, Dakar, Senegal. I mean, and then the village that we have adopted is in the Gambia. And so the Gambia, the capital city, is in Banjul. Banjul is a very, very nice looking city, metropolis type city. The village is kind of more in a rural area. So just a matter of perspective, they just got electricity like a year ago, right? And so we put in a clean water system there, and about a $60,000 clean water system for 3,600 people. We had to do it with all solar panels to power the pump and push the water out to the taps throughout the village, right? So, the kids will see the metropolis, but they'll also see the rural as well. And then I was in Africa just a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I was in Rwanda. And Rwanda is probably one of, if not the most advanced, city or country in Africa. I mean, I haven't been to all of the countries in Africa yet, but Rwanda is just so advanced, both in technology as well as they've come a long way. The genocide museum back in from 94, that genocide, that was tough to sit through that museum. But I'm so proud that the country has really made a strong comeback and is now one of the beaming examples of what a country in Africa should aspire to. They're doing wonderful things in Rwanda, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Well, Ron, I'm so glad you said that. When I've had many jobs, I'm letting people know this now, but when I was the assistant director of the Office of International Programs at a college in Kentucky, we had a student from Rwanda, And he was part of the group that came to the United States due to the ethnic cleansing of the area. And one of the African-American groups on campus invited him to speak, to talk about Africa. And he invited me to come and listen. And later we had a conversation and he said, I was a little bit distraught when African-Americans looked at me and thought I came out of a hut. He said, we live in cities. And I thought, you know, as an American, you go abroad to Europe anywhere and they look at Americans and go, do you even know that there's another nation, you know, another world that exists outside of the United States? And clearly we're not, in general, we're not taught as much history as is necessary for us to really understand the global connections of us. But that's only because we kind of are central to the world, right? You know, we speak English. And though the majority of the people, the population of people in the world do not speak English, English rules in science and in finances and in many of the different industries. So we can live like that. But so I had to kind of explain that to him because he was Rwandan. He wasn't African American. So he comes from a place where he knows America. He knows Europe. He knows South America. He's in that place where he needs to know this. So he has that kind of knowledge. And he just didn't know that, you know, we wouldn't know him. And so I love that you're bringing young people to Africa and, you know, Rwanda, changing the scope of what Rwanda would mean to anyone, because if you don't grow and learn, you just remember at a certain time period, Rwanda had this, and that's all you remember. That's all you lead with. So that's quite amazing.
What made a wonderful comeback.
Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, it's like news. We hear of all the disasters, but we rarely hear of all of the amazing happenings that come after disaster. You know, Chicago became Chicago because of the fire, you know, when things burn down, then you can build it up. Out of ashes comes the Sphinx. I was going to say the Sphinx. That's
Phoenix.
I'm thinking Egypt.
Sphinx is cool too, because I was in Egypt last year. So Sphinx is cool too.
Okay. Thanks for helping me. That's my Morehouse man for you. I'm a Spelmanite out. Well, I just want to add that there are 50 countries in Africa today, because, you know, there's always, you know, like Rwanda's always coming and going. We just actually were on a phone call together with one of our sisters who said she visited 24, 25 now. So she's about a little bit under halfway there. How many have you traveled to?
Well, because we adopted this village in the Gambia, I go there every year. So just Senegal, the Gambia. I mentioned I've been to Egypt and now Rwanda and Tanzania. We've been saying it wrong all this time. It's not Tanzania. They call it Tanzania, but those are the five countries that I've been to so far. Like I said, I'm trying to get to Ghana this year, and I'm going back to Egypt because we take the girls' rites of passage program. We're going to be taking girls to Egypt. The boys go to the Gambia.
Okay.
So that's where I got five countries so far, but it's because I go, we've adopted this village. So I go and see on projects that we do there.
And your poetry, though it informs and invites people to understand the nation that you visit, your poetry also shares information about just people in general, correct? Like how you feel about people.
Yeah, personal transformation, personal empowerment, you know, spiritual development, you know, even get into a little erotic poetry or that, but it's just, you know, I try to keep it on a metaphysical level and not too raunchy at all, but I've been able to achieve that.
Well, I think it digs all kinds.
A lot of personal development, spirituality.
So far I'm hearing the lyricalness of your poems, the rhyming, but a lot of spoken words they don't have rhymes. They just have pauses to exemplify what their overall goal is for the listener to achieve. Or sometimes there is no goal. There's just a play with words so that it has a certain, the refrain gives a certain, I don't know what, joie de vivre of hearing the poem. So it puts you in a certain mood, and that really is inclined to be something that gives too much of a meaning, just wants to give you a feeling, a way of coming to the flow of the words. So mm-hmm. Have you done spoken word poetry wherein you just want to paint the mood for the listener?
Yeah, rhyming is nowadays a little bit kind of, I'm not going to say it's a little bit lame, but it's kind of outdated. Some people still do it. I did it for sure when I started. The poem that I did earlier was a rhyming poem. But if I do another one, I'll do one of the ones that is not, because that kind of shows my evolution. But the main thing, if what you're really, what we're really trying to do is get people onto a certain vibration, yes, through your words. In other words, touching them emotionally, touching them spiritually, touching them, you know, intimately in some cases. All of that starts with the mind, right? And that is where the highest cycle, the between the mind and the heart, you know, those are the great energy chakras that can connect with people for personal transformation. So yeah, if you have a goal of spiritually transforming people and affecting people, then you have to have a certain rhythm and flow and vibration that can connect with people where they are and raise them up to you know, a higher level. That way you can use it as a form of transformation.
Well, I want you to prepare your spoken word, but usually at this time we will have a different segment that comes up so we can introduce the next guest. But we did actually run out of the building to look to see if and when we would have our beloved artist and poet, poetess here from Hudson. But it looks like she may not be able to come. So what I'm going to do right now is look to read one of my poems that comes from the book that I wrote for children. There's only one race, the human one, says me, a children's book ending racism. I actually didn't even bring the book in the studio, so I'm going to have to go from online and download it from there. But what I will say about the poem, or the several poems of the book, were designed pretty much like what you said, Ron, to give some kind of background to where young people are coming from, as far as how America was, how slavery informed how we live as Black people today, and why traditions and knowledge of where we come from is so important. I'm actually trying to download this, but it's not working. looks like I actually recorded it too. I recorded some of the poetry. I just didn't want to have to play it all, so I was going to just read one or two of this. Oh, look, a transcript comes up. Let's see if I can read from the transcript. I can read from the transcript. So one of the poems is Our Nation. It's, who worked from birth to the grave? In America, these humans were called slaves. Those of a darker skin tone were brought to America in chains, bought and sold, to work for free with many on big plantations, cotton groves. In 1861, there was an American Civil War, a fight between the South and the North. And when it ended in 1865, Lincoln and the Northerners had won. The hard work of the abolitionists was finally done. To end the wretched slavery, it took American bravery. But freeing the slaves was not a cause desired by all. Though the slaves were freed, those of their hue took heed of the new law of the nation that separated blacks and whites, segregation. Even today, there is an unwritten rule that our differences may keep us from living in certain neighborhoods and even from attending certain schools. We must, to achieve true freedom for all, and nothing else really matters, act right and think well of ourselves and of others. Oh, we got to, we get the thumbs up in the environment, but we need that poem came really overnight. So it's kind of like what you were saying. I was thinking about ways to bring the knowledge in a more lyrical way so that it could be read, you know, by young people. And I even had kindergarten teacher edit it to make sure the words were, you know, within the grammar school level of students, mm-hmm. since, you know, I'm teaching high school and stuff like that. But when I wrote about segregation, some of the students were like, well, what is that? Because like you say, you know, the young people from today, they don't see being together as having to be together. They see it as choosing to sit at the table together, because that's what they choose to do. But I know when I go into a school and you do see the differences even now, though they don't feel the unease of it, they still manifest it. And to me, it just means that traditions and culturally, we're still very differently oriented, right? So I think it will take maybe white people celebrating Kwanzaa for, you know, the traditions and the values to be similar. I mean, we come together, especially around holidays, you know, in America, around football, you know, and all of that. But we still don't come together in holidays. In fact, there was somewhere I remember reading or hearing about two separate holiday parties for a employer, because people mm-hmm. wanted to celebrate differently. So they actually had two separate ones. So it reminded me of, you know, when you're in school and you have a party where you have now different music you want to have. And so you have your separate proms, right? They might have the black prom and the white prom because of the music. So self-segregation happens, but, you know, it's when it becomes a system, you know, the system that creates it and infuses it and makes it, you know, law, where obviously it's bad, and that's where we've coming out of. But yeah, people self-segregate now all the time, and so the young people don't really understand why segregation and what it means, just, you know, definition-wise, why it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's, you know, that's where poetry can be a way of teaching. The one thing I liked about yours as well is being concise, right? You know, because people, especially young people, but people in general, I say older people more so than younger people nowadays, don't have long attention spans, right? And so, you know, I challenge myself with my poetry now is, if you can't say it in 3 minutes or less, you know, and I say on a maximum 4 minutes for my spoken word storytelling videos, but I try to keep my poems to 3 minutes and less. And if you can't get your point across in less than 3 minutes, then go back to the drawing board and you kind of overthinking things. And so, you know, when you talk about difficult subjects like segregation, or people who, if you're kind of educating, then yeah, there's an opportunity, and that's where you have to kind of be creative. Poetry allows you to be creative. lets you to be narrative, so that you can explain what had happened as well as your feelings about it or analogies of what's being done today and just put in a different way or not looked at as segregation, but it kind of is. But it's, you know, voluntary versus forced.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, poetry allows you, gives you a couple of different angles to explore that creativity, but also to be, to tell stories in our tongue, in our narrative, you know, that we want to get across. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you can't sugarcoat the emotions, you know, sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, you shouldn't, you know, but it's, you know, it is what it is. It's people's emotions that are put out on paper.
Exactly. And when you were talking about, you know, keep it short, County Cullen's mm-hmm. Heritage, it took me 10 minutes to read. And I think there is a County Cullen version that's about 6 minutes. But back then they didn't have internet and the clickers and everything, so they had time to read. And I think his actually can become a movie because it has so many moments in it where he's talking about one thing and then he's addressing another thing and then he addresses another thing and then he comes back. But he has that same refrain so that it keeps the same verbiage throughout the entirety. So, you know, it connects it. So,
well, and keep in mind, you're talking about 100 years ago, so attention span was not as big of an issue there, because now you got Instagram and TikTok,
like I
this
said,
and the other. So the attention span is more of a newer thing. Back then, that was the literary age almost, you know.
Yeah.
So we didn't have
Shakespeare. So give me some of your spoken word. We have 4 minutes.
Okay, well, cool. This is a 3 minute, another 3.5 or so minute piece.
Okay.
This one I just call She, and you can interpret She as whatever you want. But she inspires me to live life to the fullest. She never lets things get me down. I put my trust in her higher power to keep me on the right path. Her beauty commands attention wherever she goes. Her charming smile wipes away any feelings of self-doubt. My whole attitude changes just from being in her presence. Her wisdom and grace commands my obedience. She taught me the difference between fantasy and reality. You see, fantasy is all those material things I thought she deserved. Her vision for my life is focused more on character and inner peace. Reality is the challenges I must face to achieve her vision. Her knowledge helps me grow wiser as I get older. Just when I thought I mastered her needs and desires, she quickly elevated her standards to the next level. You see, she is shaping the person I will ultimately become. Whenever my mind flirts with dangerous and destructive behaviors, she quickly intervenes and brokers a deal to keep me out of trouble. My actions remain righteous despite my mental transgressions. You see, she provides the balance I desperately need to stay on course. She is the reason I want to eat healthy and exercise more. My happiness is measured by the amount of joy she feels. Her knowledge helps me. When I'm at the end of my rope, she throws me a lifeline. When I'm speechless, she puts words in my mouth. When I'm at the crossroads, she casts a deciding vote. Her strength compensates for all of my weaknesses. Now, I bet you want to know just who or what she is. She is that burning sensation felt when you fall in love. She is that feeling you get when you hear children laugh out loud. She is that inner peace you feel watching a beautiful sunrise. She is that vibration of God's love when you tap into our original first frequency. Ashe.
Ashe. Ashe. She.
So yeah, that's more of an empowering piece where she is something different for every person who listens to it.
Well, sometimes she was mother. Sometimes she was queen. Sometimes she was me. Sometimes Absolutely. She was a lover, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or want to be your lover, she. And to some people, sometimes she was he.
Absolutely.
So
there cannot be a he without a she.
Well, yeah, not yet. I think we're trying, but not yet. Yeah, I like that. I like that. I like that. Yeah, I would like so to hear that. Contrast. Change that and put a her. Yeah. So when you were writing that, I mean, how long did it take for you to write she?
You know what? I typically write most of the poems that I have written came to me on airplane during airplane rides. You know, up in that altitude, you kind of in a little bit of a meditative state where you're trying to sleep, but you're not really asleep. So you kind of end up meditating. You drift off and come out. And I would just write down what kind of came to mind, you know. So I was challenging myself to write when I was on airplane rides because I used to do spoken word at different open mics. And I would just, you know, just challenge myself to do different pieces each time, you know. So I've written so many, but a lot of them, that one just took probably about an hour plane ride. Now, you know, you go through your revision cycles, that first draft, but you know, next to the final draft. You know, that might take, you know, I kind of switched that one up a lot. But, you know, no, when it comes to your head, it's just a matter of getting it out of your head and on paper, you know.
So if you were to put some of your poems to music, would you think of it as being a rap music, a rock song? What kind of, you know.
Well, I did put a lot of my music, my poetry to music, actually, on ronspearspoetry.com, you can see. I do a lot of it. Like the one in Africa, I put that to house music because it's very drum heavy and bass line heavy. So, you know, house music is real big here in Detroit. And so most of the pieces that I do that have a more empowering rhythm, I do those to house music. Ones that are a little bit more on a spiritual side, I do that to classical music sometimes. Number one, because the classical music is over 75 years old, so you don't have to worry about copyright infringement if you publish.
Yes.
You know, so that's kind of one of them. And plus, I love classical music because it's very, very, you know, spiritual. And the musical instruments, minus the trumpets and things, don't conflict with the voice. And so people can focus on the words and not the instruments drowning out the message that I'm trying to get across. So that's another reason why I like using classical music.
When I asked you that, because, you know, a lot of people don't really, well, I don't know about a lot of people. Some people won't see lyrics as poetry. They see them as songs that, you know, they need to have the music, but, you know, it could have, mm-hmm. and then if you add music, it can have a different meaning and it puts you in a different space. Mm-hmm. Of course, during Christmas, we sing Christmas carols, which are poetry, spoken words to music. When I sing it, obviously there's no music. but one of my, like I said, one of my favorite holiday songs is not even a Christmas song. Although I do like Jingle Bells, right? I do like the traditional ones for children. But it was Hanukkah, and in 1 minute we're going to be playing that off. So I want to thank my wonderful guest, my Morehouse man, to come on and share with us his lyrical words of genius and his work that you do with young people and travels to Africa. You inspire and I admire you.
Thanks.
Definitely check out his material. If you need to find out how to do that, you can go to my website, www.kimberlyirwin.me, or his website. Want to share what that is, Ron?
ronspearspoetry.com. SPEARS. ronspearspoetry.com.
And thank you for listening to Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM. And we are tuning out with Hanukkah O Hanukkah song sung by the Boys Town.